We have kind of a special service this morning. David is going to be providing us with musical interludes throughout the next 40 minutes or so as we share with you poetry from many places and on many subjects. Remind us of the hymn that we opened our service with this morning. Wake now, my senses, and hear the earth call. Feel the deep power of being in all. Keep with the web of creation your vow, giving, receiving, as love shows us how. These are the words that we sang as we began our time together. We lit our chalice and spoke of community. And now we're going to invite you to awaken your senses, and you probably have already, as you realize, that many of your programs are written upside down. So all of our poets are listed in the order in which they're going to read. But we really would suggest that you not look at the program, but simply settle in even more deeply, relax, breathe gently, and hear with your heart the words of our poets this morning. Ours being those who are part of our WOOF community, our guest poet from the community of Emerge, the immigration justice group that some of us are part of as well, and other poets who are part of our world community. You'll recognize their names, I'm sure. We'll be offering poetry in several pods this morning. They'll be nature, family, men's, women's, and God. Those pods will be woven together by David's music, and we hope that you can enjoy every moment of it. We'll begin with Beth Ronk reading her poem, Untitled.
In the light, we are separated by walls and fences, by languages, the color of our skin, the texture of our hair, our shoes, by the food we eat. In the darkness, we cannot see those things that divide us. Tú eres mi otro yo. You are my other me. Close your eyes to remember how it is that love behaves, moving freely from person to person, across lakes, across plains and mountains, north and south, east and west. Love does not know that wall, that fence, the word stranger. Love knows no borders. So we must close our eyes to remember how it is that love behaves and carry that memory into the light.
This is She Who Knits in the Buddhist Monastery by Tricia Knoll. Her bare toes nudge the barn floor from her caned rocking chair. Her fingers knit stripes, cables of mantle and crust, rifts of watersheds running down to ruffled water blue binding. Ribbed fabric slumps around her knotted calves like lazy Vermont mountains. I pass near her. I hear a hawk, a gong. I respect silence. I did not come for preaching. Rock and knit, patience, stitch by stitch, inch by inch, she binds up guardian green. I am one apprentice, come to find my call in hoe and loam, heirloom seed and pollen. Others move beside me, basket weavers, windmill makers, moss minders, modelers of fault zones, river tenders, ocean keepers, and salvage menders. Her needles swish against each other. She tilts her head at my glass of cold water, crosses the needles in her left hand, and reaches with her right. I offer my sweated glass, see a lifeline on her palm.
Early morning run, conjuring visions of spring, by Susan Lonsdale, myself. Dark December morning, dripping, dripping, gold leaves, large as hands, cling stubbornly to a burly big leaf maple, rebuking rain, rebuking wind. Being gold, they can do what they like. In looming darkened houses, a few windows glow. Rectangles of light frame early risers, pulling on their layers, preparing to step out into the half-light of a morning that grudgingly wakens. A runner strains to see the path, slips, catches herself, but slips again, and glimpses, as she goes down, a solo dandelion, upstart intruder from what's to come.
Nature's welcome, my bomb Cleon Hawkinson. When I finally arrived, I expected to hear a herald of angels, a rumble of timpani, a crash of cymbals, but the slope of wild grass before me was silent, still. The glacial lake mirrored a puff of cloud. The sun beat down. My dry mouth tasted of the sweat from my burning feet. Breath roared in my ears. Then the world came to life. A deer fly burrowed into my thigh. Twin marmots whistled, sliding down the icy slope. a distant mumble of waterfall. The puff of cloud began to drift. Water clapped ashore. Holden Lake with Anne. By my poem, Cleone Hawkinson. On a Thursday, just past noon 1,000 years ago, the ridge collapsed, tumbling out a boulder field 1 mile across. Marmots and ladybugs spun to watch. The sudden roar, rumble, thump, crushing lupin. On a Thursday in August, just past noon, standing on a chunk of that unforgiving granite, Anne directed her fly line as gracefully as a conductor, lightly touching the lake's surface, then flicking it away, rousing a lazy trout to rise in a ripple of cloud. While her dad fished around the corner and her mom dozed caramel chocolate melting on the roof of her mouth, I sat awed by Anne's silhouette, the earthquake and echo, now marmot's whistle, a ladybug napping on lupin.
Tai Chi Trees by Stephen Brooks. Harmony awakens in stillness, as maple trees stand rooted in the park beside century-old statues. In timeless ritual, their branches glide, following a ribbon of motion seen only by those marble faces, inhaling the energy of ages and exhaling a sense of gravity only they can feel. Together, they meditate on the myriad fleeting lives flickering past them.
Ode to Dirt by poet Sharon Olds. Dear Dirt, I am sorry I slighted you. I thought that you were only the background for the leading characters, the plants and animals and human animals. It's as if I had loved only the stars and not the sky which gave them space in which to shine, subtle, various, sensitive. You are the skin of our terrain. You're our democracy. When I understand I had never honored you as a living equal, I was ashamed of myself, as if I had not recognized a character who looked so different from me. But now I can see us all made of the same basic materials, cousins of that first exploding from nothing, in our intricate equation together. Oh, dirt, help us find ways to serve your life, you who have brought us forth and fed us, and who at the end will take us in and rotate with us and wobble and orbit.
Thank you.
is called Blood, written by Devon Irvin and myself. When I look at my daughters, no blood between us, I see family. I would shed blood for them. Blood, bloodshed, life force, bloodline, my blood, blood of my blood, blood family. What does that even mean? If I am my soul, my consciousness, then what is family? Not bodies, not DNA, not blood. Who is family? What is family? Are we all family? Did we choose our Earth family? And if so, do bloodlines really matter? How will I choose to define family? Is there some other definition that exists outside of our imagination? Are there families of souls? If so, are you in mine?
Love Song for My Parents by Selima Lawson. In spring of 1938, he brought her a few pussy willows, timid buds bursting through shells that tried to keep them closed. That summer, a basket of cherries. She baked her first pie for him. Together they picked apples, firm, radiant skins colored by heat from a sun approaching the season of harvest. Laughing and drunk on the fragrance of baking cinnamon, they gobbled the pie hot, their chins dripping vanilla ice cream. In the heart of autumn, he came again, arms filled with the season's first bittersweet, wild, flaming seeds opening on hand on hard vines lifted from their sheltered habitat. For 60 years, he brought her pussy willows and bittersweet. She baked him countless pies, gave him three strong daughters and a little boy who could not live. And season after season, there were still moments amidst the dark sorrows and the angers of that house when they would laugh together, remembering how it was to be drunk on the fragrance of baking cinnamon. And not wanting me to be disappointed, they tried to teach me I could never have it all. But I have known times when the mere fragment is so complete that having it all doesn't matter. Fragments of love so exquisite, so absolute, that the words all, always, also have no meaning. One tiny moment of pure joy erases yesterday's doing or not doing, even as it sketches the outline of tomorrow's truth. And the most precious piece sparkles in roaring fire as it burns and leaps from the center of a heart in the very act of breaking open.
The Bedroom Set by myself, Susan Mosdale. A handsome chest of cherry wood, a simple half moon carved into the drawer front. It holds silver now, the family silver, long unused. The chest with its half moons, there were two of them then, hers and his, facing two cherrywood beds, hers and his. Family lore told of the incident when the three children, asleep in their own beds, awakened to a crash, then shouts, a bellow. Out of their beds, they scrambled, the three, pounded down the hall to the parental door, locked. Mama, Dad, what happened? Timmy, the littlest, set up a wail. Immediate silence. Then, behind the locked door, a strained parental voice, your mother's bed broke.
Another slightly amusing one. Easter Morning by Jim Harrison. On Easter morning, all over America, the peasants are frying potatoes in bacon grease. We're not supposed to have peasants, but there are tens of millions of them frying potatoes on Easter morning, cheap and delicious with ketchup. If Jesus were here this morning, he might be eating fried potatoes with my friend, who was a 51 Dodge and a 72 Pontiac. When his kids ask why they don't have a new car, he says, these cars were new once, and now they're experienced. He can fix anything, and when rich folks call to get a toilet repaired, he pauses extra hours so they can further learn what we're made of. I told him that in Mexico, the poor say that when there's lightning, the rich think that God is taking their picture. He laughed. Like peasants everywhere in the history of the world, ours can't figure out why they're getting poorer. Their sons join the army to get work being shot at. Your ideals are invisible clouds, so try not to suffocate the poor, the peasants, with your sympathies. They know that you're staring at them.
End of Men by Julianne Hart. All was in my hands before. How did I view the world? Life was mine. I saw no more, no other voice I heard. See the walls come tumbling down of houses and of men. See the walls come tumbling down to see where I had been. Not knowing war, now knowing fear, I did not stay the same. In heart, I see what's clearly dear. Through this, my life was changed. See the walls come tumbling down of houses and of men. See see the walls come tumbling down and what I found in them. Some way, somehow, I was saved. I could not see this then. In shattered dreams, the road is paved. That makes us greater men. See the walls come tumbling down of houses and of men. See the walls come tumbling down, and what now for me begins. The walls I built around myself, these I had to fall. Love and courage showed me above the most precious walls of all. See the walls come tumbling down of houses and of men. See the walls come tumbling down. Death gave life back again. It was man that made me pay, and me that lost my heart. And man that me and country saved. Of men I too am part. See the walls come tumbling down that covered up my soul. See the walls come tumbling down. The man I am that knows.
I'm Jim Johnson. These first two short poems are mine. Languages. The boy spoke dialect. School kids bullied him. Said he didn't say things right. Oh, he could speak standard English, standard Dutch. But he refused to speak like the elite. It was how he knew to rebel. Rebel against the unseen hand that slapped his family down. In school, he spoke dialect. Standard was the standard at home. Dad and me, a photo. He stands erect, not the stiff pose of the Victorians, nor the relaxed stance of today, but the not quite at attention of the 40s. His dark, double-breasted suit seems out of place at the lake shore. He wears glasses and an almost smile. I stand next to him, my head about as high as his hip. I wear a two-tone shirt, pressed slacks, hair slicked down, finger in my nose. This is by W.S. Merwin. Yesterday, my friend says I was not a good son. You understand? I say yes. I understand. He says I did not go to see my parents very often, you know? And I say, yes, I know. Even when I was living in the same city, he says, maybe I would go there once a month, or maybe even less. I say, oh, yes. He says the last time I went to see my father. I say the last time I saw my father. He says the last time I saw my father, he was asking me about my life, how I was making out, and he went to the next room to get something to give me. Oh, I say, feeling again the cold of my father's hand the last time. He says my father turned in the doorway and saw me look at my wristwatch. And he said, you know, I would like you to stay and talk with me. Oh, yes, I say. But if you're busy, he said, I don't want you to feel that you have to just because I'm here. I say nothing. He says, my father said maybe you have important work that you are doing, or maybe you should be seeing somebody. I don't want to keep you. I look out the window. My friend is older than I am. He says, I told my father it was so. And I got up and left him then, you know, though there was nowhere I had to go and nothing I had to do.
If I Wrote My Life
by Suleyma.
If I wrote my life and called it a story, the cleverly titled chapters would all be printed in crisp, clear script and begun with a stylized capital letter in bold type. Every paragraph would be neatly indented. A tidy piece of work, offending no one. My story could be gracious and ladylike, with effortless sentences, gracefully varied in length, embraced by flawless punctuation. All in all, it would be a pleasant piece of reading, a bit bland, perhaps, with its little list of achievements modestly embedded, quite acceptable as an obituary. My particular life, however, might be better written as a poem in process, a rambling narrative that might look to the casual observer like a tumble of uneven stanzas and random line breaks without a comma in sight, its margins smudged with asterisks and abbreviations. There might be elongated question marks and vigorous erasures, but nothing ever crossed out. Nothing. Anyone could see it was a messy project, and some might want to argue whether it would even qualify as a poem. Interested readers would include those who enjoy distractions and others who prefer to live within a pattern of their own making rather than puzzle over identifying and dissecting the patterns of words and the spaces between them that others have made. But now and then, there comes a reader who delights in the way the words plunge in without introduction and how the design of the page gives no hint of the end.
This is called I See You, written by myself, Devon Urban. I see you sit in stunned silence as the window of awareness cracks open. I see your expression shift as the realization slowly settles into your body. I see you waking up, starting to see what I see in you. I see you giving and giving and giving as you struggle to be seen, to matter, to belong. Somewhere you learn to believe that overgiving leads to belonging, that selflessness leads to connection. I see you say no to yourself every damn day. You say no to sleep, to exercise, to health, to using your beautiful voice. I see you settle for less, dim down, put off, and abandon. I see the resulting sadness and the despair. Your life gets set aside. Even writing gets set aside to attend to the needs of others. I wait and watch and live for these days when I see the seeds of change. You're starting to see your boundaries, the ones in place and those that need to be. I see you learning you can't give your way into a relationship. I see you learning. I see you waking up. I see you setting boundaries. And I see you starting to give to yourself.
This poem is called Beneath the Sweater and the Skin. It's by Portland poet Jeanette Encinias. How many years of beauty do I have left, she asks me. How many more do you want? Here is 34. Here is 50. When you are 80 years old and your beauty rises in ways your cells cannot even imagine now, and your wild bones grow luminous and ripe, having carried the weight of a passionate life. When your hair is aflame with winter, and you have decades of learning and leaving and loving sewn into the corners of your eyes,
and your children come home to find their own history in your face. When you know what it feels like to fail ferociously and have gained the capacity to rise and rise and rise again, when you can make your tea on a quiet and ridiculously lonely afternoon and still have a song in your heart, queen owl wings beating beneath the cotton of your sweater. Because your beauty began there, beneath the sweater and the skin. Remember? This is when I will take you into my arms and coo, you brave and glorious thing, you've come so far. I see you. Your beauty is breathtaking.
Late Winter Rainbow by Paul Ann Peterson. Unearthly visitor, come close. You are wide enough to light up half the bleak day. You touched down on a spot so near I could fling open the doors of this building and run out into your bands of glowing mist, into your seven bangles jangling on air's arm. Today's heaven is a gray-eyed embroiderer, and you are her skeins of silk floss, her bright lengths of balm. Oh, half-loop of luminous hues, the sky has fallen hard. You are the sky's love letter, spread open for all our world to read. Two poems by Jennifer Frickman. Impossibilities. We live beneath a sun we can't look at. The light that we depend upon for our vision will blind us if we look directly at it. Our lives are constructed around managing exposure. The sun is not yellow. It does not sit fixed in the corner of the sky, despite the careful observation of every child who ever wielded a crayon. Yes, this is disappointing. The truth is never easy. The brain works overtime to shape the sky, to reckon with the sun, to give the best possible simplifications. The world is flat underfoot. Our feet bend to the small discontinuities. Soil, cobbles, sand, infinite possibilities. Our brain partners gravity to keep us upright. Two legs with impossibly tiny feet. This is one human way of doing things. Still, we cling to the ground and stay there under the sun, sitting, standing, stretching out on the grass with a book, a banana, a bowl of beans. There are many ways of being human. How it is with God. I am always praying to the ceiling, slightly yellowed with cobwebs. I look there first when I feel anxious. In times of terrible angst, I look up to the light fixture over and over and over. Maybe someday God will pull the textured plaster apart with bony marble fingers or astonishing ebony hands. I don't know. Up there in the cobwebs, above this hard little bed, I keep hoping God is there somewhere, leaning toward me with a gracious gesture. Perhaps God will belly laugh, say something large, rounded, comforting, pierce the ceiling, that gravity-woven firmament. I wait for her self-generated nimbus of clear starry light to send a beam of benediction straight from the tiny gold finial into my pounding pulse and down to the ropey sinews of my heart. But here I am again, looking for God's face in the overhead. Reflected in the frosted glass fixture, I am trying once more to find the deity in this room. Maybe God could jump down from her perch in the heavens, bounce off the bed, land on feathered feet, a celestial chicken, a rubber ball, and with startling cackle, give me a peek at her perfect, moony countenance, or a peck from her tiny silver beak. Then I would know, without a pearly shadow of a doubt, that God heard me yell, "Help! Help!" For all time, I might shout my gratitude for showing me that she really is somewhere.
It's our final poem about God. The final poem of our program this morning. God Says Yes to Me, by Kaylin Hote. I asked God if it was okay to be melodramatic, and she said yes. I asked her if it was okay to be short, and she said it sure is. I asked her if I could wear nail polish or not wear nail polish, and she said, "Honey," she calls me that sometimes, she said, "You can do just exactly what you want to." "Thanks, God," I said. "And is it even okay if I don't paragraph my letters?" "Sweet cakes," God said. Who knows where she picked that up. "What I'm telling you is, yes, yes, yes."